everybody. Thanks for listening to the Adulting is Easy podcast, where we make adulting easier by making money easier. This is your host, Lauren. And pardon my voice this week. I am getting over strep throat, but I'm going to do the best we can. I'm probably just going to let Brendan Bennett do most of the talking. He's a 27-year-old Midwest investor based out of the Cleveland, Ohio market. His portfolio consists of 11 properties and 21 units with a mix of short-term rental, mid-term rental, and traditional long-term rentals. Brendan is also a licensed real estate agent with eXp and is the VP of Revenue at Upright, a hard money lender based out of Cleveland, Ohio. Thanks for joining me, Brendan.
Thanks for having me, Lauren. I appreciate it.
Our goal for today is to make adulting easier for listeners by discussing a personal finance topic, since managing money is a huge part of adulting. So today, Brendan, we're going to talk about house hacking. And what exactly is house hacking?
Yeah, so I think house hacking, in a general sense, is leveraging a residence that you live in to spit off some level of income to help pay for the cost of the home. And in some cases, it's the full amount. In some cases, it's some of the amount. But it's a way to subsidize what would normally be your rent or mortgage payment by having other people pay you rent income in some way or form.
How did you come across house hacking? And maybe you didn't know it was called house hacking at the time. That's possible.
Yeah, I didn't. So Brandon Turner was probably the first person from Bigger Pockets that I had learned about the topic a little bit. I was 20 years old. I was finishing up my undergraduate degree, getting ready to transition to grad school. It was my first time moving out of my parents' house. I knew that I was going to have to pay rent in a student rental. And I started to kind of sweat that rental payment, which, you know, as someone who was trying to put themselves through college and also work a little bit, I was like, man, I've never had a $400 rent payment per month as a 20-year-old. So I was like, I need to figure out a way to try to subsidize that. So that's when I first started getting really, really interested in the topic. And then Craig Kerlop, also from Bigger Pockets, he put a lot of really great content out there, podcasts, blogs, books. He really solidified the concept for me and taught me the ropes, you know, both through reading and his other forms of content. And that really propelled me to take my first step when I was 22 or 23, I believe.
What did that first step look like?
So the first step for me was playing defense with my expenses. So I was making not a ton of money as a college student does. And I, you know, I was making maybe 1500 to $2,000 a month or whatever it was at the time. So my goal was first to get my fixed expenses as minimized as possible, because you can't buy a house. Yes, if you have the down payment, you can technically buy a house, but you maybe shouldn't buy a house if that's like every penny you have. Because if a furnace breaks, you got a leak in the roof, you're now upside down, you're going into debt, and you're working in the reverse goal is what you're trying to do. So for me, the first step was cleaning up my personal finances and becoming really, really intentional around a budget. So I did that first. I stockpiled, I think it was, you know, $3,500 or $4,000, which seemed like $1 million to me at the time. And luckily, that was enough for me to approach a close friend of mine who also was very financially savvy, very entrepreneurial in spirit. He ran his own business out of his college dorm room. And I said, hey, we should partner up. One, because doing business together would be fun. But two, like, I'm short on cash and I won't be able to buy this house by myself. So my first house hack was actually a partnership house hack with a close friend. And we can dive into that a little bit more if we want. But that was kind of my introduction into house hacking.
So that was a single family home?
So this was actually a duplex, ironically also in a college town, but it was a college town that was close to mine and my friend's hometown. It's right near, it's called Oberlin College. It's this really, really expensive, you know, high reputation liberal arts college. And we found a duplex about two or three blocks south of campus for like $110,000. And we underwrote the numbers to having student rentals on the top. And then we had a couple of friends that were also moving back to our hometown after college, looking for jobs in the Cleveland area. And we ended up putting some students on the second floor, rented that out to them consistently. And then we even house hacked the unit that my buddy and I shared. So it was a three-bedroom downstairs unit. He and his girlfriend lived in one unit. We had one of our other best friends from high school live in the other bedroom. And then I was in the third bedroom. So we were four people, pretty cozy in a three-bedroom, 900 square feet, one bathroom apartment.
So you guys financed it, obviously, for the $110,000. Do you remember what the payment was?
The payment, I believe, was $850. So we got a great rate at the time. I want to say it was like, you know, high threes, low fours. The property taxes and insurance were next to nothing on the house because only $100,000 purchase price. We put a decent amount of sweat equity into that house. It was not in rental shape when we purchased it. And I barely know how to swing a hammer, let alone do home renovation, but we made our way through it with some help of friends and family. So super thankful for that. But we got the place into a livable and comfortable position enough for the four of us to not feel like, we're super uncomfortable in the house together.
How much were you getting from the student?
They were paying $1,200 a month for a 3-bedroom unit upstairs. And then our unit, the two additional people that were living in our unit, I think one paid 400 and the other paid two. So that was 600 from the downstairs, 1200 from the upstairs. We were 1800 total on around like $800 in fixed expenses monthly for the mortgage payment.
That's amazing.
It was great. Again, it felt like we were on top of the world for being, 22, 23. Still trying to find like our place and our first formal job outside of undergrad and grad school. But yeah, it felt like $1 million.
It's like you're be it feels like you're beating the system when that happens, right?
Yeah, it doesn't feel fair in some senses, but then it's also like this addictive feeling, right? Where you're like, holy crap, I can't believe that we just executed that. And it gives you that confidence to say, like, how do we do it again? And how do we replicate that system?
So did you do it again?
I did it again. I did it four times, going on five here shortly. So from that Oberlin College duplex, the same friend and I were just, again, so excited, but we were like, we want something modestly more comfortable. And I also got a job with Upright in downtown Cleveland. So my commute was 40 minutes from Oberlin, and then he wasn't really bound to any location. He said, hey, Cleveland sounds fun. We can go out on the weekends. It's a good location. So we ended up finding a duplex about 10 minutes outside of downtown Cleveland. It had already been renovated a decent amount by the prior owners, but they had just owned it for 20 years and were just ready to cash out. And we purchased that one for $142,000. I want to say the payment was around like $1,100. So we stepped up our purchase price by around 40 grand. We stepped up our mortgage payment by about $300 or $400. But the great thing is, Cleveland, just given the demand for housing, we got a little bit higher rental amounts for that unit, while also getting a little bit elevated of an experience, because this unit, while it also had 3 bedrooms and 1 bath, it had a finished attic that we were able to kind of use for spare space. We weren't all on top of each other. The same 4 roommates moved from Oberlin out to this Cleveland home.
And so you were still getting what? Like, were you still getting $600 from your side?
Yeah, I think it was around there. It might have went up slightly to like 7, and then we were getting like 1300 or 1400 for the upstairs. So our mortgage payment went up, but the spread from the rent to the mortgage was pretty similar. And again, we had to do like maybe 2 or 3 grand worth of work. We added a closet in one of the rooms and did a couple things, but it wasn't as big of a lift as the first house. So it was kind of nice, that transition of not having to really, pick up the paintbrush a ton and just be able to move in right away.
And you kept the first one.
Kept the first one, still own it to this day. That's our baby. That was my first house hack, and we're going to hold on to it as long as we can, as long as it makes sense.
You have students in both units now.
So we, ironically, we have a group of students on the top floor, and then we have a professor and his family on the bottom floor. So both, the economy of that local college is producing a lot of the rental demand for us. And when I tell people that, they're like, isn't that kind of a conflict? Like, crazy college students that are partying and then a family downstairs that's a professor. I think because of the culture of that college, it's a very kind of laid back group of people. They're very respectful. I don't know if it's like your typical like state college type of student. So it works really well. Both groups are looking to renew this upcoming summer. So we've had great luck, and that property is, knock on wood, not had a ton of crazy capital expenses as of recent.
I don't think that would go well in Gainesville, Florida, where I went to school. Let me just say.
Yeah. Or like you think about it, like in Ohio State, or
Yeah.
like a Bowling Green, which is close to us in Ohio. And I'm like, man, I don't know. I don't know how that would go. But we're getting lucky with where we are with that liberal arts college for sure.
Are you self-managing that one?
I am. So I self-manage all of our short-term and midterms. The one unit in my portfolio that is more of like a lifestyle hack. So it's a Airbnb in Charleston, South Carolina. We just closed on that fairly recently. That is not my specialty. So I knew that I am competent and capable of managing short or midterm and long-term in Cleveland, Ohio. I did not feel confident managing something 700 miles away. So we do have a property manager for the Airbnb in Charleston, but I self-manage everything else. either for my partners that I have the house with or for myself for the units that I own 100%.
So have you, do you also still have the duplex in Cleveland?
I do. I have the duplex in Cleveland still. And then from that duplex, then bought two more, a duplex and then a triplex subsequent years, all in like kind of the same general Cleveland area. It's some neighborhoods called like Edgewater and Lakewood to the west side of Cleveland.
And you kept moving.
Kept moving. So I have, out of the 11 properties I own, I have yet to sell anything, which there's going to come a time. I've only been in the real estate space. I've only owned property for 4 or 5 years. There's going to come a point in time where, you know, the capital expense is getting too high, or, you know, something gives with that property and I have to sell it, 1031, trade up into something else. But, you know, my whole goal off of this is, yes, to spit off cash flow, to be able to subsidize my lifestyle, my expenses. But the other thing is like legacy and wealth. And I think the way that I get that is to keep these properties as long as I can. So I probably won't sell anything until I'm forced to sell it due to some sort of like huge CapEx expense.
What's 1031?
So 1031 is something that I've never done, but for my understanding, it is when you're able to sell a property and defer those taxes until you sell the subsequent property. And in most cases, people 1031 into perpetuity, so they never have to pay that tax on whatever they're trading up. So if I buy something for $100,000, it appreciates to $150,000 and I sell it for $150,000. In a typical sense, I would have to pay some level of tax on that $150,000 minus the $100,000 and the depreciation that got written off on that property over the course of time that I owned it. With the 1031, whatever that profit margin is, $50,000 to $60,000, depending on the depreciation, I don't have to pay taxes on that yet. I can defer that tax liability and thus have more purchasing power for the next property that I buy.
Yep. Love it. I've done it before. And the 1031 exchange, it sounds like this crazy loophole, but what it incentivizes is you to sell properties and trade up and free up some of those. I mean, if you, let's say you're doing like a natural trade up from like single family to duplex to quad to small multi, that frees that up for other investors. It incentivizes people to sell properties. So that's just something that I wanted to mention there as well.
Yeah, 100%. I think it also, if you think about it from a city planning perspective, I would imagine that at a local level, if I trade up from a single to a duplex to a quad, I'm providing ideally higher quality rentals in an area that needs more housing. And the 1031 like allows me to do that, right? Without the 1031, it would be a little bit more difficult for me to trade up and I might not be able to get as many units out to the market local to Cleveland as that local municipality might want.
All right. So house hacking sounds awesome. Are there any cons to it?
There are cons to house hacking in the sense that it's not going to be as comfortable as if you were to go rent a $2,200 a month single bedroom or two bedroom new build in a sky rise in Cleveland where you have a view, you have access to a pool, you have access to all these amenities. It's got a downside in the sense that it's not as comfortable. But I also think comfort is relative because for me, comfort is security and it's financial security, and house hacking has enabled me to do that. So for me, it enabled my comfort. And I was also able just to delay that gratification as long as I needed to up until really February of last year when I finally bought a single family home and I do not have any other roommates or anything except for my girlfriend. There's no other people living in the house. So it's very comfortable. It's very homey. That's the main downside. I think another downside could be that owning property in general, whether it's house hacking or as a traditional landlord, it comes with some level of stress. If you are not prepared, if you're not kind of calm in the center of the storm, I think that can be a lot for some people. And I think as you have experienced, Lauren, that's just kind of a trial by fire situation. Like as soon as, you know, I was afraid of evictions for my entire course of being a landlord. And I think once you go through one, you're like, okay, I understand the process. I have the information. I'm not as scared anymore. And it's just that exposure therapy kind of gets you through these different things. But I've also been anxious at 11 p.m. that, you know, I have to make this repair to this property or I'm going to lose rent for 2 months, right? So there's trade-offs, but I think the scale very obviously tips in the way of the house hackers across the country that continue to buy because the benefits outweigh the cons.
Also, you mentioned the interest rate that you got on the duplex earlier. There's a lower interest rate on a duplex if you move into it than if you buy it purely for investment. Same thing with the down payment. I mean, now you could put 5% down on a quad if you're going to live there. Like, no brainer to me. I mean, duplexes and triplexes are great too. Having roommates, also a possibility, right? So that's a huge thing. And then the other positive side to house hacking is you kind of get to test out being a landlord. And I don't think, at least for me, you don't have any stress of being like far away from the property. I think a lot of people, like, they're like, what if I don't know what's going on over there? Well, if you live next door in a duplex, you're keeping an eye on the property, and maybe you're getting comfortable as these different situations occur, and you're getting, to use your term, your exposure therapy right next door.
Yeah, absolutely. I think having the ability to just knock on the door, walk into the tenant's unit, observe whatever the issue is, try to diagnose it yourself, and be able to say, hey, this is a level one emergency or a level 10 emergency. It's really hard to do that over the phone. I've had situations where tenants have texted me and I'm like, oh man, this is extremely bad. It's going to cost me a ton of money. I then get a contractor over there. They're like, hey, this is like a $100 fix. This is very, very simple. So I think, to your point, Lauren, having that accessibility and that proximity allows you to diagnose things way quicker, which allows you to bring that level of stress back down.
Yep, that's a great point. So, Brendan, who should house hack?
In a perfect world, I think everyone should house hack. Everyone should understand the concepts of what it means to house hack. And I think, as you and I were talking about pre-recording, it's very difficult in some markets, and other markets it's really easy. Cleveland, for example, I'm very proud of myself that I've house hacked four going on five times and have accumulated these rentals. But housing in Cleveland is also relatively cheap, and there's also a plethora of multifamily units that are accessible to me. If you go to some markets, the entry point is $600,000-$700,000. It's really, really hard to find multifamily. So that strategy may not work. Or it could be a market where one of my close friends from high school lives, like New York City, where it is near impossible to buy something in that downtown area or even in some of the suburbs just because of the cost. So I think everyone's situation is a little bit different, but I think that if you have the means and the ability, house hacking should ideally be for anyone who is looking to start their financial journey on becoming financially independent.
And they should do it more than once if they like it.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give a quick example of the house that I'm living in now. We got a great deal on it. Myself and my girlfriend live there. It's a new construction home built by the local municipality land bank. So there was a subsidy on the house. We got an awesome deal on it. It's got a 15-year tax abatement, so the payment is great. So in a perfect world, from the outside looking in, like, I should be super stoked, right? I have a new construction home. My payment's relatively light because of the tax abatement. But the grass isn't always greener in the sense that if something breaks of that property, I had a $400, minor furnace thing that we had to get tweaked from the builder. And that hurts because I don't have revenue coming in on that particular house to offset that expense. Whereas if I was spending $3,000 on a furnace at the Oberlin property, in my mind, I'm like, that's a business expense. It's getting covered by my tenants. So I definitely would suggest that people do it multiple times, as many as they can, within reason. But I will say that as someone who's kind of on the other side, where I've transitioned into more of like that deferred or delayed house hack or the primary hacking, I think that it's right for me in this current time. But I would love, ideally, to continue to do that, 10 times into my mid to late 30s if I was, still in that position. So yes, you should do it more than once.
Yeah, primary hacking is when you buy a primary house and then you know that you're going to turn that into a rental someday. So when you buy a new primary and you keep that one and you keep it with that loan, which is a big deal. Again, that interest rate is a point, at least a point lower. The down payment was lower. And I definitely did that for my first rental, was a primary hack. And I guess technically it was a house hack because I had a roommate, which I just didn't know it at the time in 2012.
Yeah, and another concept, Lauren, that I learned this from a local investor in Cleveland on Facebook, and maybe this is a made up term, but I'm going to recycle it. He calls the acquisition of an Airbnb property like a lifestyle hack. So his lifestyle is that he wants to be able to go to Florida for 2 weeks out of the year, enjoy a property, but not have to pay for the Airbnb lodging, the hotel lodging, whatever it is. So that is kind of the evolution of what the principles that I learned in the commonplace house hacking of having roommates in my unit, having roommates upstairs or downstairs, My buddy and I that just acquired that property in Charleston, South Carolina, we are now kind of lifestyle hack in the sense that that's one of our favorite vacation places ever. Like he's been going there for 20 years. I recently found out about the area 3 years ago and fell in love with it. So we're going to get the benefit of being able to go to this property, 10 days out of the year or whatever it is, for free, ideally, as long as we're making the money that we hope to make. And the rest of it is subsidized by the guest. So I think this is kind of like the most higher end version of house hacking, but it definitely is a way to enable that lifestyle that you want without having to swipe a $3,000 Airbnb bill every time you want to do it.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think that makes a lot of sense for existing real estate investors to do. The people
100%.
that think they're going to get a free trip to Disney every year, so they buy a property just outside of Orlando.
Yeah.
There's a ton of competition there. It's not the
Sure.
first person that had that idea.
Yep.
And if they're not already a real estate investor, they're not going to have that calm in the face of the storm like you were talking about. So I think that makes a lot of sense. I don't think people should necessarily just have the primary house and be like, now I've got a free vacation home. It's
Right.
almost not worth it for just that.
No, absolutely. And there's a reason why that is my 11th property out of
Exactly.
11, right? It's I went through all these smaller hurdles, took my lickings and learned from it and moved on and took all that knowledge, information, that network that I built just over the course of the last 5 years and felt empowered enough to take that step. But definitely agree that it's not impossible to do for your first deal, but definitely would recommend you with, crawl before you run kind of thing.
Absolutely. So I'll just say this here real quick. I've house hacked 4 times, and in running a spreadsheet, these are approximate numbers, but I ran a spreadsheet when I was about 29, 30 years old of when I could retire in the single family home I was living in. And my husband and I were making good money and everything, saving good money. It was like 55. When I ran the numbers as if I house hacked, it was like 35. Now you do
Yeah.
kind of have to house hack almost forever in that scenario, but or at least for a while. But like the difference, the financial difference the house hacking can make in your life, even if you just do it for a short time, free up a bunch of expenses, take everything that you were spending towards your house and invest it in other real estate or stocks or savings, paying down debt, whatever it is. I mean, it really, really can launch you, and almost guarantees that you're going to be able to retire and not live in poverty when you're old, like, period.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, a great example of that too, Lauren, is, and I don't know the extent of your listener base, but my dad is 52 years old, and him and I are talking right now about ways that he could house hack, right? Because he's in a stage of his life where, he's clocked 30 years at his job. He is, of retirement age for his position, and we're looking at ways for him to be able to do it, right? So it's not just the 22-year-old coming out of college. It's for anyone that has like one, the motivation and the drive to kind of reach that financial independence and minimize those monthly expenses. But again, my dad in his mid-50s, he's someone that is open to the idea because he understands like the power that it brings and how much comfort will come from it financially.
We've had a similar conversation with my father-in-law, who's also in his 50s. Like, let's think about retirement, but like, let's just add it. Basically, we'll just add a little cushion in
Yeah.
that scenario. It's really the most powerful financial thing you can do. It's real estate investing, yes. I also want to say this too. You can just do it one time
Oh yeah.
and that's it. Like, you don't have
No.
to like go on forever in
No.
perpetuity. You don't have to actually become a quote unquote real estate investor, although you are if you have a house hack. But you could just like get yourself on track and then move on with your life if you want.
Yeah, that's the way, Lauren, that I pitch it to a lot of my friends who are like, "Hey, real estate is not my jam. I don't eat, sleep, and breathe it the way that you do, and I still want some of the benefit." I'm like, "Do it once. Find a property that maybe doesn't even cash flow while you're living in it, but when you move out, you're going to make $800 to $1,000. Now, when you and your significant other go and buy your, forever home for right now, and let's say that payment's $2,000." Your payment's really now 1200 because that house hack that you purchased that is now a full-time rental that is now spitting off income, your purchasing power for that luxury home that you want next is so much higher, right? And again, I wouldn't recommend that you do it just to enable you to go make a crazy financial decision on the home that you want to live in for the next 5 or 10 years. But if you know that you're going to buy a $300,000 to $500,000 single family home, that's a goal of yours and you've made that decision. If you can defer that for a year and a half, 2 years, get the duplex, understand the principles, know how to manage people, increase the rents. you can then subsidize that single family home where you're not house hacking, you're not sharing a wall with anybody, and you kind of have the best of both worlds. You're getting appreciation from two properties instead of one. You have one that's spitting off income that's subsidizing your primary mortgage. So to me, that's the most powerful way for people who are like, hey, I don't want to do this. This isn't my career track. I'm not, you know, staying up till midnight reading books about this. I think that's a great fundamental way, like one and done. Just do one, use it to subsidize your next property.
That is the hard part. People sometimes don't want to talk to me about real estate because I think they think I'm going to try to talk them into like,
oh, yeah.
I have 12 units. I think they're like, Lauren's going to talk me into 12 units. It's like, no, I promise I'm not going
no.
to.
Yeah, I've had the same thing. I put PowerPoints together for some of my friends where I'm like, hey, this is all you got to do. It's very simple. And I think too, for those of you that are listening that are house hackers already, and like you're saying, hey, I've had that exact same conversation with a friend or a family member. There was probably people when you were making your decision that pulled you over the edge of like taking that leap into your first house hack. So you probably have to be that person for your dad, your family member, your friend, whoever it might be. So, you know, take this as an initiative to like go make that call or text message to whoever it is and try to give them a little bit more push to make the move.
Is there anything else you want to add, Brendan, before we wrap up?
Just in a general sense, I think that house hacking is extremely powerful. And I think the two avenues that it'll lead you down is either the first one we just talked about, which is one and done, I'm going to subsidize my primary residence and that's good enough. Or it's going to light this fire in you around how much real estate can unlock in your life. And you might just find a career path in it. My graduate degree was in industrial psychology. I am obviously not an industrial psychologist. I've figured out what house hacking was, fell in love with it, and now made a career out of it. Right. So I think just going through that exploration and learning from how house hacking works, it'll either enable you financially, or you're going to find a love and a passion in it that's going to light you on fire, which is awesome.
Can you let people know how they can connect with you and get in touch with you?
Yeah. So I can be found on Instagram at Quade Property Group. You can also email me at brendan.bennett@upright.us. If you have any questions about lending or just questions about house hacking in general, feel free to email me or DM me on Instagram.
You guys can follow me on Twitter/X at Adulting is Easy, Instagram at Adulting is Easy Real, or YouTube, where this is also posted at Adulting is Easy. If you like this episode, you also like episode 123, when you house hack and it has mold, but you still make money. Thanks again for listening, everybody. Hopefully, Brendan and I have made adulting a little easier for you.